upside, ceilings. In the end, that is what wins fantasy football championships. I know that small gains feel great when you draft the wide receiver 33 and he finishes as the wide receiver 26. You do that 3, 4, 5 times in your draft and you think you're an absolute genius. But in the end, when you sit back and reflect on a singular fantasy football season, it's all about the players who overperformed by, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 spots at their position. Hayden, that's what we're going to do today. Outline 10 players, at least, that we think could be big, massive hits and be the one or ones that you need in fantasy football this season.
A couple things from this. I think there's a difference between like a sleeper who's like now like in your starting lineup versus I think this tier that we're talking about today is like, we know they're starting, but they can actually be the reason why you come in first or second place in your fantasy leagues. I did notice looking at our list, every single player is between their second season and the fifth season, except for who's in his sixth season. So this is all about the primes and not necessarily the rookies because, you know, a pretty bad rookie class, but we're not talking about older guys. This is like the true taking the leap, the JSN types from last season.
Producer Reeves, beep out that name. We don't want any foreshadowing here of who the names might be. We want people to pay attention to the rest of this episode. We've done the show actually for 3 or 4 seasons at this point. I went back and watched last year's episode, which was with Ron Stewart. We talked about Devon Achan, Chris Olave, Trevor Lawrence were always mentioned in this episode. And I mean, a lot of those players were really pushed people to the playoffs or even won the entire thing. So let's outline it again. And I always want to talk about this too, Hayden. Often when you hear the term upside, that's often linked to best ball because people believe that that is the format to just take swings and home run shots. I think it's the exact opposite because in your redraft leagues, you can afford to have misses. Like the turnover is so gigantic when looking at your roster from the start of the season to the end of the season that allows for the big swings. That allows for the misses because they don't hurt you as much because you can get rid of them. Fair?
I think that's fair. And then also the cutoff is you typically, we're talking about 12-team leagues, like 6 teams make the playoffs. So you can kind of like afford to take a little bit of an L, but then later on swing for the fences. So I think in both formats, you want to swing for the fences. And I think for this discussion, I think we're talking a lot about the guys in the primes of their career. Like we know these guys are good at football and for whatever reason, maybe they're a little bit underpriced versus where the ceiling could be. And that might be for environmental reasons. That just might be because we just like these guys a lot on tape. But I feel pretty good about this list.
Totally. And I know that there are some payouts out there for second and third places in your leagues, but in the end, does anyone remember you unless you won the whole damn thing? So again, that's what we're going for here. The players that win leagues. And I think the one name that completely packages this entire idea this year is Brock Bowers. He is the 8th pick of the 2nd round right now on Yahoo and in best ball out there. Simply put, Hayden, if we get 2020 or 2022 Travis Kelce season from Brock Bowers this year, it's a wrap. Like that is your upside. That is your league winner. In those 2 seasons, he averaged 17.4 and 15.4 points per game. And it's not just, you know, basically scoring as one of the top wide receivers that season. It's also the drastic gap that it gives you from like the tight end 5 in those years, which was around 9.5 fantasy points. So Hayden, that gives you like 6 or 8 points any given week. That is a buffer from you to the person that has the tight end 5, not the tight end 12, the tight end 5 every single week. And we know how many matchups come down to that few amount of points on every single week of action in the NFL.
Yeah, Brock Bowers, the most yards per game the first 2 seasons since at least 2000 at 65 yards per game. And most of the players going into that 3rd season actually add more fantasy points per game. We're talking about like the best, you know, all the Hall of Famers, including like the Kelces and Antonio Gates tier. So we're talking about improved quarterback play this year, hopefully between Kirk Cousins and Fernando Mendoza, hopefully better scheme in general. And it's still the same wide receiver crew throwing Jalen Naylor for Jacoby Myers. It's about a wash to me. So there's the upside here is, like you said, it's Travis Kelce. I have him and you have him, pretty much all of the Yahoo rankers have him in the middle of the 2nd round in half PPR. I think in full PPR, I can even make him go up another hair. And I think the big discussion is not even just Brock Bowers. To me, after about tight end 8 this year, there's kind of a drop off. And unfortunately, tight end 4 to tight end 8 on Yahoo are all priced up pretty high. It's like to me, like the biggest gap between the Brock Bowers versus like the consensus players going around him, I think that gap between the tight ends and the rest of that group is like smallest by Brock Bowers rather than like paying a 4th round pick for Tyler Warren.
So is this achievable, I guess, is the question. Mm-hmm. Like, I went back and just looked at the per game rates that Travis Kelce had in those seasons. His best one, 9.7 targets per game, 7 catches on average, 94 yards and 0.7 touchdowns
wow.
per contest. Again, that would have given him 17.4 half PPR points per game. That would have actually scored last year as the wide receiver 3. It's a half point ahead of Ja'Marr Chase on any given week. I mean, that's pretty sick. And even in the other season, you know, he was averaging about like the wide receiver 6 in points per game. So that would have put him just ahead of George Pickens last year. So like, I guess, Hayden, what we're saying is if this goes correct, and we can, again, outline in a moment why it might, you can draft Amon-Ra St. Brown in the first round and also get Amon-Ra St. Brown in the second round with Brock Bowers as your pick. And like, it kind of comes down to this question, like, why doesn't Clint Kubiak just make Brock Bowers his Jaxon Smith-Njigba this year? It's an easy question, but what if it really is that easy? I mean, we just had Ryan Paganetti on the show who said that their goal last year with the Raiders was to have Brock Bowers have the most targets and catches in NFL history. Clint Kubiak just transformed JSN's output in year 3 as a player that got 51% of his receiving production in 2 or fewer wide receiver sets, despite that only making up, you know, 38% of his actual routes out there. Brock Bowers can be your primary read, albeit maybe from some slightly different alignments in those positions, but it should all flow through Brock Bowers, who led all tight ends with 42% of his team's targets that went into the end zone last season.
Yeah, the two tight end stuff's going to be really critical because I think that's what the Raiders should use a lot of the times looking at their personnel. Yes. He's just going to dominate. He's going to operate as a wide receiver like we saw with Travis Kelce, Colson Loveland last year, George Kittle throughout the year. So I think he's a certified baller. We're talking about a potential future Hall of Famer, generational tight end prospect than like the likes of Kyle Pitts. I think the tough part is, like, next to Drake London, Nico Collins, I think like he should be talked about kind of in that tier. I just think that in full PPR redraft, instead of like playing the ping pong tight end touchdown game that we typically talk about, I think in full PPR, just taking the targets that Brock Bowers is going to get is going to go a long way.
And working those heavier personnel groups makes sense. You outlined Michael Mayer. I even throw in Connor Hayward coming from the Pittsburgh Steelers as a fullback. And we, you know, saw Clint Kubiak utilized a fullback last season as well. And then just the per rate stuff in terms of explosive plays, 10 plus passes or 10 plus yards down the field for Clint Kubiak is just so drastically different than the Raiders last year. I mean, they were 29th in rate of pass plays that gained 10 or more yards. Kubiak's last two spots were 2nd and 12th. And I mean, heading into those jobs, it's not like everyone thought that the Saints and the Seahawks were going to be 2nd and 12th in terms of 10 plus yard passing plays, and he transformed them into that. So despite maybe our hesitation on the overall package that the Raiders bring, good coaching really amplifies all of that, and Clint Kubiak can do that.
All right, my first name is Colson Loveland. Just want to continue on this tight end conversation just because I think there is that drop off that I'm nervous about. Once you get past Kyle Pitts, you're talking about all the olds, the Mark Andrews, the George Kittles, the Travis Kelces. Isaiah Likely doesn't look nearly as good with Malik Nabers back. So like, to me, I want to avoid that drop off, which means we have to pick our battles. We can't get Brock Bowers every single time. Colson Loveland in round 4 is very intriguing to me. He was only 21 years old last year when he went crazy. In the last 4 games, including the NFL playoffs, we're talking about 18.2 expected half PPR points. That is what like Ja'Marr Chase and Puka Nacua get. He had 97 yards per game in that. If you just look at from week 8 on, that's the first game that he had 75% of the snaps. In that, he was a tight end 4 on tight end 3 overall expected points. He was way more involved than Luther Burden, way more involved than Rome Odunze when everybody was healthy. And I'm just looking at the draft capital, Ben Johnson, the history that this coaching tree has with their tight ends and how good Colson Loveland was on tape to me. It's agility, it's explosiveness, it's physicality. He can block, he can be the isolated receiver. It's exactly what you're talking about. And just like with Brock Bowers, there is a chance that he could just be the wide receiver 1 on his team. We like Rome. We like Luther Burden. We'll get to those guys in a second, but it's ambiguous. And you really want to be the 1st or 2nd pass catcher on a team, not to mention Caleb Williams, his 3rd season, 2nd season with Ben Johnson. There's a lot of room for growth here.
And let's also remember, it took about until week 5 or 6 for Ben Johnson to really utilize Colson Loveland and Luther Burden last year. So we don't even have a full, you know, set of games in our brains to perfectly contextualize and value what Colson Loveland can be in this offense. And what we do have towards the end of the season, I mean, was just tremendous stuff. If you look at week 15, they played over half their offensive snaps with two plus tight ends on the field in five of their final six games after doing so only once in their first 13. Again, that shows you how infrequently they utilize this personnel group that, again, now is really going to accentuate Colson Loveland. And then you add in Sam Roush on day two of the draft and 13 personnel, if they're going to run that this year. Colson Loveland had a cool 4.66 yards per route run and 53% of his team's market share in those reps.
Yeah. And if you watch some of those, a lot of those are like in the red zone where he's like the backside player and he just like, it's either a fade or he's going to cross your face. What's so interesting about his tape is he can run by some of the fastest players out there. Like you have like the Kyle Duggar types out there, Quay Walker, and then he also can moss you. So like, to me, this is what an all pro tight end looks like. I think like he's got like the best like pathway to become a version of a George Kittle who obviously went crazy. And I have full faith in this Bears offense, especially their defense is complete trash. Kobe Turner, their safety that they just brought in, he's now going to be missing like 2 to 3 months with an injury that he just picked up in training camp. They're going to have to win shootouts. It's the Vikings. It's the Packers. It's the Lions. This is the division that you want to find yourself in the 30 to 35 point shootouts. And not a surprise, the Bears are top 10 in projected points this year.
I feel like one of these top four tight ends is going to enter that league winner status. I mean, we saw Trey McBride lap the field last year, but it's Bowers, McBride, Colson Loveland. And I know I continuously throw Tyler Warren in that conversation too, but I think you and I hit on the two big ones here in Brock Bowers in round two, or Colson Loveland in round four, which is going in on Yahoo right now. I actually think we can package a lot of Chicago Bears here because you could probably label three of them and maybe even four if we want to throw in some running backs that have the upside to win fantasy leagues this year. I'll next go to Luther Burden because it's difficult to find a bigger Luther Burden fan than me out there. Wide receiver 24 on Yahoo right now in the fifth round. And then wide receiver 23 in the fourth round in best ball at this moment. I don't know if you saw the quote recently, but Ben Johnson believes it's Luther Burden's destiny to be one of the best wide receivers in the league and actually compared his competitiveness and intensity to Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jarvis Landry. And while some people might interpret that as he's going to play the Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jarvis Landry role, to me, it's more about the mindset that obviously Ben Johnson cares about and what he brings between the hashes every single week. And I think that's so important because Ben Johnson is able to rip out and, you know, absorb all of this amazing talent that we saw from Luther Burden in college and his peak moments, but maybe the inconsistency was there during his final week at Missouri. And it's so obvious that we saw some of that during his rookie year. He's just different with the ball in his hands. Even the underlying metrics are, I think, fantastic. Fourth best in first downs per route run rate over the last few years when you look at all rookie wide receivers, only behind Puka Nacua, Rashi Rice, and Drake London. And I thought he improved in those two or three wide receiver sets on the end breakers and, you know, the crossing patterns that matter so much to a Ben Johnson scheme. And I cannot wait to see what Luther Burden does in year two, because he truly is one of these players that if it all comes together, Hayden, I think the sky is the limit for him.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's a perfect home run candidate here. The stat that I saw with him, targets per route run, when DJ Moore was not on the field, he had a 51% targets per route run, which is insane stuff. At the same time, when Colson Loveland's on the field, that drops to 8% targets per route run. Rome Odunze, there's some on-off splits. There's a lot of noise on exactly where he's going to fit in the pecking order. He's without question their best yards after the catch threat in the offense. And I do think there's going to be plenty of that opportunity. He's going to be in two wide receiver sets. The third wide receiver is barely going to get involved. Cole Kmet barely going to get involved in the offense. It's really centered around these three pass catchers. And there's enough volume and scoring potential for all three of them to get home. And I think that really you have three swings here to hit on either Burden, Rome, or Colson Loveland. I feel like a goal of ours should be to exit with one of those in, you know, the fourth, fifth, or sixth round, especially on Yahoo, where the ADPs for Luther Burden and Rome Odunze are a lot easier to get to versus in best ball, where they go a full round earlier.
One final point on Luther Burden, because I think you could tell a story a little bit with how all these players can reach their, you know, league winning upside. For him, it's as simple as, what if Rome's foot isn't great? You know, what if it's not healthy? If it's not right? And if that's the case, then you have Colson Loveland and Luther Burden as like the two primary pass catchers for the vast majority of this season. And if that's the case, then both are going to get there. You know, it's like a pie that split three ways that's now down to two, because there really aren't any other pass catchers on this roster at this moment. So I think it's a pretty, despite how the playoffs played out in terms of his yards per route run and all that stuff, it's a pretty easy pathway for me to write that he becomes one of these like high upside and successful stories, even if we all believe he has high upside and he's going to be successful.
Quickly, just want to hit on Rome Odunze because he's my favorite, like at cost of all of these guys. Last year, when we had DJ Moore part of this pie that you're talking about, he was still the wide receiver 18 in expected points, wide receiver 22 in targets per game at over seven. He just didn't come down with enough of these contested catch situations. Caleb missed them way too often. I'm just hoping like the chemistry between those two gets better going into this year. And I really do think that for somebody as big and athletic as he is, he can get in and out of his break. And there's no reason why he can't come down with more of these 50-50 balls. In fact, if you go back to watch his tape at Washington and read any scouting report, watch our video on him, one of the big calling cards is like he's just dunking on everybody so thick. It's just so strong. So I'm expecting that to get better. So I would not rule out Rome Odunze 68th overall on Yahoo. Like to me, that is like way, 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 way too late. And if I can only pick one at cost, I would actually go with the cheapest one in Rome Odunze. But like you said, I want the other two as well.
I don't want to speak for Matt, but reading between the lines on shows that we did with him, I think he's in the same boat as you of ranking Rome ahead of Luther Burner, at least having the value be much closer to each other.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Matt's got Colson Loveland at 32nd. He's got Rome Odunze 44th and then Luther Burden 45th. So that's that's a lot of investment, but their ADPs are not in the 30s and 40s like we're talking about. They are a little bit later. Yeah, just get one of them.
I do want to say I'm still on the Luther Burden train as the best wide receiver for fantasy football of this group. However, that conversation just kind of epitomized what all fantasy football discussions have been this summer, where it seems like you can only pick one. I do want to remind people back in 2023 that Ben Johnson did have the wide receiver 4 in points per game, the tight end 1 in points per game, the running back 11 and 12 in points per game. So this offense is good enough that it can support a whole bunch of really valuable assets, but that doesn't mean necessarily that those are all league winners, albeit two of them were in Amon Ross St. Brown and Sam Laporta. My final point though, just reading some great analyst work this year and asking myself some questions, I do think we kind of like really grasp onto these big downfield targets because when they hit, they are like so successful that we kind of overlook and don't value enough the gimmies. And it is on my radar notable for me that Luther Burden had an ADOT that was like half as large as Rome Odunze's at 7.5. And I think that that's like the perfect way to weaponize him in this offense, and he can also beat you vertically. So I almost love that, the gimmies and the consistency that Luther Burden probably brings this offense more than Rome Odunze. I've talked about it in other shows. I did want to bring it up on ours since this is our show. Jalen Waddle at wide receiver 18 on Yahoo, 6th pick of the 4th round. He's wide receiver 21 on best ball. So hey, it's one of those rare combinations that he's actually going even earlier on Yahoo and might be the earliest out there on any platform. We can get into if that's even rich for our blood in a little bit. But I also am certain that Jalen Waddle is going to go to the moon this year because Sean Payton knows that this is the reason and the way that his offense goes from average to great through Jalen Waddle. And that's why they trade a first round pick for him. I mean, we had Ryan Heath in the program for multiple years. He's always outlined historically that league winning wide receivers, their first down per route run rate is very sticky. And it's why we were on Chris Olave last year. Jalen Waddle ranked 8th in that mark last season. And weeks 1 through 16 last year, he was wide receiver 18 in points per game on an offense that was 31st in plays per contest. And now he goes to the offense that is 5th in plays per game. And just, again, to outline that, Cortland Sutton ran 664 routes compared to Jalen Waddle's 442.
Wow.
And they basically played the same amount of games. So you're getting someone here who the talent we know is up there, but now actually goes to an environment that he can be the lead wide receiver that really focuses on the routes that he runs at a very high level. And he is probably the reason that the Broncos offense cannot take a massive leap this season.
Yeah. I mean, you traded for a first rounder plus for him. He's going to get all of the touches. We're talking downfield touches, underneath touches. This is an offense that's led in screens over the last 2 years with Bo Nix and Sean Payton, who both like that. And those have been going to Marvin Mims and Troy Franklin. I've got a feeling those are now going to go to Jalen Waddle. From 2022 to 2025, that's when Waddle was with Tyreek Hill. In the games where Tua was active and not like a bunch of scrub quarterbacks, Waddle was a wide receiver 16 per game, all while Tyreek Hill was the wide receiver three. Like, that's how good Jalen Waddle is, that even when you have the Tyreek Hill offense, he's still getting home. All the per route stuff is there. The routes are going to expand, so he doesn't even have to get better. And I just have a really good feeling that Sean Payton has like a really good idea of how to utilize him, and they could actually really use him because the Evan Engram stuff wasn't working. A lot of the throws to the running backs weren't working. All the backup wide receivers were talking about like really low yards per target, and not to mention, that was in the first and second seasons of Bo Nix. Nobody wants to give Bo Nix any credit, but typically third-year quarterbacks are better than first and second-year quarterbacks. And before Tyreek Hill was a Dolphin, in that season, Jalen Waddle caught 104 passes. So full PPR, I love him. I would take him in round 3 if you had to. Good news is you don't have to. You can draft him in the 4th round, and that's where I'm targeting him.
Just to outline how the Broncos use their wide receivers, they were 2nd in screen rate last year, 3rd in go routes, 12th in crossing route targets. That's all where Jalen Waddle, when you close your eyes and think about where he's catching the football, it's in those exact areas. And the Broncos had the 3rd most passes off play action last year, and Jalen Waddle has over 4 yards per route run on play action last season. So the big question, though, Hayden, is can you find a single person who doesn't love Jalen Waddle this year? The answer is no. Like, everyone does, right? And so his price just keeps going up and up and up. And so now, in the middle of the 4th round, I know you're comfortable with it. I'm comfortable with it as well. But that is just after the likes of Zay Flowers and Terry McMillan. And then before, again, other wide receivers we like, Emeka Egbuka, Ladd McConkey, Garrett Wilson, we've already talked about on this program. So it's rich. But at the same time, this could be one of those players easily that climbs 10 spots from the wide receiver 18 to the wide receiver 8. On the season.
I'm not even sure if it's rich. Like, you go back to the Sean Payton history. Like, we were talking about some Michael Thomas seasons mixed in there. Yep. Obviously, Jalen Waddle has to be Michael Thomas. That's obviously easier said than done. But I do think that he is extremely talented. He was just like not, he didn't have to be used because you had the other guys involved and they didn't run that many plays.
Who's next for you?
Let's go with Emeka Egbuka. And I really struggle between, you know, Emeka and Jalen Waddle and these types. I think I would rather have Waddle. But for Emeka Egbuka, there were some crazy on-off splits that happened this last season. Through the first 11 weeks, he was a wide receiver 9. And then from weeks 12 through week 18, wide receiver 64. So, like, what the hell happened between those stats? And by the way, the fact that he had a more than a half season as a top 10 fantasy wide receiver, like, to me, there's, like, a proof of concept of upside. But in week 12, that's when Baker Mayfield suffered an AC joint injury. Emeka Egbuka's catchable ball rate was 50% from that point forward. It was at 61% in weeks 1 through 11. So that's part of it. Also, in week 6, Emeka picked up a hamstring injury. Next Gen Stats had tracking data on him. 11 routes of at least 18 miles per hour in the first 5 weeks of the season. Only 11 such routes in the remaining 12 weeks after the hamstring injury. That was a good note from Benjamin Solak over there. Also, we have Mike Evans on and off the field. Without Mike Evans, 29% target share. With Mike Evans, 19%. If you guys haven't noticed, Mike Evans is in San Francisco. And then the final note, and this is maybe as big as all of those on-off splits, is what Zach Robinson brings to the table. We saw with Drake London last year where his role kind of changed for the better. We also remember the Triple Crown season from Cooper Kupp. This is like the Z receiver, can play him inside, can play him on the outside. Emeka Egbuka, if you go back and watch his rookie season, he was almost playing out of position as like an X receiver working down the field. He caught so many of those post routes, which is a credit because I didn't think that he necessarily was going to do that as a prospect. The fact that he can do that, but most of his game was like, I thought, more Cooper Kupp level. And there was a quote directly from Zach Robinson comparing the two of them. So you're going to see screens, gimme touches that necessarily we did not see this previous season.
The Z stuff is really important to me because if there were any negative metrics for Emeka Egbuka after his rookie season, that again, the first half was sensational. It was the man coverage stuff that he was targeted on 24% of his routes, but gained only 0.91 yards per route run, only one touchdown against man coverage. And so with a Z, you can get him in sacks, get him in motion, get him free releases, and then he can take that given space and then manufacture even more off of it. And obviously the vast majority of coverage in the NFL is zone coverage that kind of turns into man coverage once you work down the field. But I'm really into Emeka Egbuka. You know, the best part of last year also coincided with the best part of Baker Mayfield. And then when Baker Mayfield's season inevitably like takes a nosedive halfway through because he gets banged up, or, you know, the high wire act that he plays and avoiding sacks and throwing into triple coverage, and it comes down into Emeka Egbuka's hands. that doesn't work necessarily for the entire 17 games. So I do want to be mindful of that as well.
Yes, but we also have seen Baker Mayfield throw for a million touchdowns and yards at times too. And last year, his entire offensive line was all banged up. Hopefully that's not the case this season. Hopefully Baker Mayfield can stay a little bit healthier. So just one of those where we're talking about a young player in a better role with an offense that's been functional for a long, long time. And for a big stint, he has proven the upside that we're hoping for. So this is not like completely theoretical. He just has to like get back to what he was doing. And I saw the same thing on the man coverage stuff. Like, he's not athletic enough to like pull away on big post routes all the time, especially if you're facing press man coverage at X receiver. He's just not going to do that this year. And like his physicality, working over the middle, fighting for yards after the catch, I think that that's like really what made Emeka Egbuka a good prospect. Not to mention, like, if you want to do the JSN comparisons, like, you're talking about somebody that was in the exact same role at Ohio State.
Strategy corner. Okay. We've talked at length about a number of these wide receivers over our last four episodes at this point, but we are basically telling you that you need to exit your draft with one of Jalen Waddle, Emeka Egbuka, Ladd McConkey, Garrett Wilson, Terry McLaurin, and Luther Burden. Fair? I mean, those are our four and fifth round wide receivers right now.
Yeah, I didn't want to talk about Kenneth Walker in the first round or second round over and over, but we'd like a lot of the running backs in rounds 1-2, and then, you know, 4-5-6-7, that's kind of, I think, the sweet spot for a lot of these good prices.
Well, I do have one more wide receiver I want to talk about in the sixth round, and that's Christian Watson, because it's been a couple months since I've brought up Christian Watson's name, but to me, he definitely fits this league winner persona. Oh, yeah. Wide receiver 27 on Yahoo, the seventh pick in the sixth round. He's a more of a fifth round pick in best ball, but still right around this price tag. I mean, the big numbers here, when he plays over 75% routes, he has averaged 17.5 fantasy points per game. He's only done that 13 career games. Now, that's the negative outcome here, but look, when you're swinging for upside, sometimes some injury designations come with it, because when those guys play 17 games, then you get some insane value. And I don't think people realize how much Christian Watson's game changed last year. Like, maybe in a lot of people's minds out there, he is still this high variance, deep ball, nine route, either works or it doesn't, and my A dot is 21 yards. No more. He transformed his game and his skills last year, and that stands out in a whole bunch of areas. I mean, one, out routes jumped from being 7.7% of his targets for his career up to 35% last season. Shorter A dot on those targets, more gimmies, more consistency, higher catch rate. That is exactly what we want. And as you know, we got an interview with Jordan Love this week that we heard that Matthew Golden is going to be the X. Christian Watson is going to be the Z. That is music to my ears for someone that has heavy investment in Christian Watson this season, because that means he's the one that gets moved around. He gets these free releases. He gets the manufactured space for him. And he's also going to be out there and playing in two wide receiver sets. So the world is lining up for Christian Watson to have a massive, massive season. And the only reason, albeit a big reason, that we get him at a discount is because he's missed a number of games in his career so far.
But that's like the perfect narrative that you want to fade, exactly, because he's healthy right now, and he's also a freak athlete. Like, remember, he came back from a torn ACL that happened in this last January, and he was on pace for over 1,000 yards after coming back from a very severe injury. He can do that because he's one of the freakiest athletes in the world. Like, that's what we're dealing with here. I noticed the same thing. It wasn't only vertical shots this last season. He's obviously going to be very good at those long term. There's ambiguous pecking order here, where Christian Watson's starting to establish himself as more of like the de facto guy. There's not going to be a rotation. He's going to be playing 90% of the snaps this season, which that has not always been the case, like you noted. I think the Packers have tons of upside. I also noticed in training camp, LaFleur has been playing with more pace and getting in and out of the huddle. If you look over the last 4 years, the Packers are like the slowest offense in the NFL. So if that's something that they're talking about this year, maybe with the Josh Jacobs looming suspension, or just Josh Jacobs wearing down, they don't trust the offensive line as much. Maybe they're not going to be as balanced as they have been before. That could mean more pass attempts in general. So really good football player, $100 million contract this offseason. The Packers are going to get the most out of them. Like, is there a big difference between him, Jameson Williams, him, Terry McLaurin? Like, he's like 2-3 rounds priced below those guys. I don't see a role difference between the two. I don't see a talent difference. I don't see an offense difference between all those guys.
Just to focus in the out route stuff a little bit more, he actually had more catches and out routes last year than he had total targets on out routes in his opening three seasons. Wow. Isn't that crazy? And that stands out when you go back and watch the Packers tape and it's a third and six, got to have it situation, or a second and 11. It's not these, you know, second and 10 shot plays with Jordan Love being an ambitious thrower. No, and like got to have it situations. They trusted Christian Watson to win his isolated rep, run legit big boy routes. And he did that. I'm not going to say for the first time in his career, but like more consistently than he ever has in his career. And this Packers team also runs some heavier personnel looks. Like we keep talking about two wide receiver sets because, you know, Jayne Reed has never done them. Matthew Golden kind of barely played during his rookie year. And so again, it goes back to Christian Watson now going from high variance and unpredictable to having to be the consistent member of his passing attack. And it's like perfectly lined up for him to do it. So I absolutely love clicking Christian Watson's name this season.
All right, my next name, Cam Scadabo, kind of going off the injury thing with Scadabo, is he's coming off of injury, but he's not currently injured. He's been practicing full go in training camp well ahead of schedule here. And his injury at least happened halfway through the season, not like in January when Christian Watson tore his ACL that previous season. This is about volume. This is about scheme. This is about just a role that accumulates fantasy points. He's going to be the goal line back. That's what happened last year. He's a bulldozer, backflips. You guys get it. And he also catches passes. Like he had three receptions per game this past season in full PPR. He was the RB10 on RB12 usage. He was pretty much that in half PPR. I don't think that those touches are necessarily going away. And keep in mind that the Giants were not a very good team this last season. They added Francis Malinoa, a first round guard, who's really going to help clear some lanes for Cam Scadabo. Both tackles are returning. Hopefully they're both healthier this season as well. Jackson Gart going into the second season. Dart, Harbaugh, everybody's just kept saying, what's the offense going to look like? How about Cam Scadabo 20 touches per game? Right now, there's an injury discount based off where he finished last year, where he's being drafted. And I do think I want to buy the dip on that because I saw him do backflips 2 months ago. And
he said no more backflips, by the way, Hayden. He said no more.
Until he's on the football field when he will start doing backflips in the end zone because that's his role to lose. So there's kind of a teardrop. I think there's kind of like some dead zone type of profiles potentially in round three that makes me a little bit nervous. His price tag is at least another round after that. And last year, he was already a top 10 fantasy running back.
He's expensive on Yahoo. He's going as running back 18 in the early parts of round four. And Hayden, he's now going ahead of Travis Achane of the New Orleans Saints. Is that rich?
That one's close because I can see both of them getting home. I feel better about Scadabo catching more passes, and as he gets healthier and like there's more proof that he's actually healthy, I might consider Scadabo, but I have to go back and update my rankings.
It's an interesting narrative to follow, right? Because when Achane was signed in free agency, we all thought bell cow, they're going to get rid of Alvin Kamara. And now, as you know, ADPs kind of move as the narratives do. Now that Alvin Kamara is staying on a pretty sizable contract, and you know, there's some reports of, well, it might not be 50-50, but it might be 60-40 in these types of things versus Cam Scadabo. We aren't necessarily sure how the injury is going to hold up. It was a significant injury on top of it, but you see more and more positivity. He's out there in training camp and taking reps with the front ones and all that stuff. And so they're kind of going in two different directions. Just to outline what you said, 73% of the backfield touches, running back 8, ran a route on 56% of the dropbacks. That's running back 9. That's pretty dang good stuff. I mean, that is complete ownership of his backfield when he was out there. And by the way, we're going to have Nate Tice on the program tomorrow, one of our Yahoo colleagues, to, since we always cite it, talk about projected team points and scoring for these teams tomorrow. I do want to throw out that the Giants right now are projected for basically the same amount of points as the Broncos and as the Saints. So we keep saying we want to draft those guys. Should we equally want to draft New York Giants at this time too?
I remember doing my Jackson Dart profile and he was like 12th, 15th in a lot of like the advanced metrics without Malik Nabers last year. And like, they just like could not convert in the red area because they did not have the offensive line. Like that's why they got Greg Roman, Harbaugh, obviously Francis Malinoa early on. So yeah, I'm just optimistic that he was born to touch the ball 20 plus times in his every single game. Doesn't matter what level, you know, if this was in junior college, or as a rookie, it's just hard to ignore the touches. And this the sample size of like that the ankle injury. Obviously, you don't want your ankle being pointed sideways. But the reason why there's such an injury discount is because like a couple running backs had bad returns. But, like the sample size is like very small with this injury. Like maybe Pollard just like wasn't right, but Cam Scadabo was just ahead. Who knows?
The amount of yards he had when he was a starter, 90, 104, 110, and 94 total yards in his four full games.
Yeah.
Pretty good stuff. Okay, since we're talking about running backs, I'll bring up Chase Brown, okay? And I know we're going back into round two, and I just outlined Chase Brown in our top 15 or how the first round should go. But I just want to reiterate some stuff because in this mess of running backs, I continue to think that Chase Brown kind of gets forgotten about. And I would argue that he has the best environment of any running back in the NFL. Like going through this, that's what stood out to me more and more and more. Okay. He averaged 105 yards from scrimmage per game over the final 11 weeks with Joe Flacco and Burrow as his quarterbacks. All right. And when just Burrow was on the field, he hit that 20 points per game mark that we want. That really is a league winning running back. That's running back two in points per game. I mean, that's incredible stuff. And we were able to get him as running back 9 or 10, depending on your platform. That's also including that he's fifth in running back route rate and fifth in targets per game over the last couple years. The top four, CMC, Bijan, Gibbs, Achan, all being drafted before him. So again, yeah, there's your little discount of someone that catches a bunch of passes, and it's either you need to catch a bunch of passes or you need to score a bunch of touchdowns. We know he has the passing stuff, and Hayden, he's also seventh in team market share across the league on inside the 20-yard line carries and ninth on inside the 10-yard line. So it really goes to show that when you're the only big boy in the backfield that Chase Brown is, you're going to get opportunities in every area. And maybe, just maybe, that can be more important than individual talent when it comes to this stuff.
I see it the same exact way. Like I wrote him up and like I could not write anything negative about Zero. Any of it. It's just like Chase Brown's a totally fine NFL starter and the scheme is perfect with Burrow. 21 games with Burrow active over the past two seasons, RB5 usage just last year, RB4 usage, and his efficiency is starting to pick up just a little bit, like the success rate stuff as the offensive line gets a little bit better. I don't want to say that it's a great offensive line, but it's no longer the worst offensive line in the NFL like we're used to with the Bengals here. So, I mean, he's a pretty nice pick. He feels very safe out there. And very. If kind of like Ja'Marr Chase goes down, something like that, he's going to get even more involved in the receptions. That's one thing that kind of goes up and down with his career is like how involved he is in the receiving game. But he doesn't even have to do that now that he's getting all the touches inside the 5-yard line.
And, you know, a big difference is he's had 11 touchdowns in terms of the most in a single season for him. If that jumps up because he's so utilized so often to 14 or 15, yep, then that's, he runs hot on touchdown variance. And that's a massive, massive win for him. All five starters returned along the offensive line. I do want to bring up with Nate tomorrow about what I brought up on the, you know, stats versus film episode about the under center stuff here with the Bengals, because according to all Bengals observers, it is not going well in right. terms of the play action from under center. However, I want to turn our attention quickly just to what Josh McDaniel said about under center work and how it impacts a running back specifically. I never really want to be in gun, because I do think there's an element of predictability. It certainly affects the types of runs you can run. You don't have the same angles and the defense yep. knows it. So this under center stuff, as much as we're going to focus in on Burrow to Chase and to T. Higgins, the person that actually might impact favorably the most is Chase Brown in the rushing department.
All right, my next name is Breece Hall. And there's obviously a big difference between the running backs at the 3-4 turn versus the round 1-2 turn. But if you exited with Amon-Ra, Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, one of those guys, I still want you to draft one of these running backs at the 3-4 turn, because I don't think that 0RB is the way to go at this point. With Breece Hall, there was at least one stretch where he was finishing as a top 5, top 10 running back. Since then, it's been very inconsistent. I thought his play on the field has been inconsistent coming off that injury. We're talking about way removed from the injury at this point. And I just want to recognize that the Jets offense is also getting better this year. Like last year, we were dealing with Brady Cook. Geno Smith is much better than Brady Cook, at least. And Breece Hall was kind of holding the line last year as this Jets offensive line is emerging. Frank Reich makes me very nervous. Everyone also knows that. I don't think Braylon Allen's very good. I don't think Isaiah Davis is really good. Breece Hall has been on pace for about 300 touches every single season. I don't see any reason to go away from that. And if the Jets could not be, you know, dead last in scoring this year, just because they have multiple first rounders, Armon Membu's an absolute home run pick from this last draft class as well, that things just look a little bit better. They're paying him a ton of money. He was one of their foundation guys. Remember when they're trading everybody, they decided to keep Breece Hall. I think the only way to look at that is that he's going to touch the ball a ton of times. And if we get back to that season where he was actually pulling away from everybody on tape, that's how you can have this kind of upside case. So I get it. The Jets stink. Totally agree with that. I just think that there's not that big of a difference between Breece Hall's like upside case versus a lot of the other running backs in this tier.
How many times this offseason have you heard that, well, Breece Hall is coming off a career high in rushing yards? I would say never, because no one cares. And it's because he only scored 5 touchdowns, and that led to the running back 21 in points per game. But when we come on a show like this and, you know, you say something positive about Breece Hall, there were some positives from last season that kind of get swept under the rug because the Jets were so miserable, right? Also, over the past 2 years, Breece Hall has only had 10 rushing attempts inside the 5-yard line. 19 players had 10 alone last season. So that's an offensive framework stat, an offensive environment stat, not a Breece Hall one necessarily, because he's just been a part of organizations and teams that don't give him scoring opportunities and scoring positions. So I am hoping that Breece Hall, based on the contract that they gave him, can really ward off any pressure that Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis, which was the conversation heading into last season at this time, we know that Braylon Allen got hurt and, you know, they just didn't get those opportunities. So if that happens, and if this offensive line is that good, I understand they've invested so much in the pass catching pieces, but what if Breece Hall just turns out to be the best fantasy asset from the Jets this year?
Yeah, I think just like having Omar Cooper and obviously Kenyon Sadiq and those types, it's like kind of just raising the floor of the offense. I don't think those guys are so good that they're going to be stealing all this like work from Breece Hall. Like, to me, the offense is still Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall. It's just that the other pieces around them aren't like just guys that aren't going to be in the NFL anymore, which I think just is going to help Breece Hall get to the goal line more often. I've had enough of the Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis stuff. Like, these guys are like just forgettable players. Like, this is going to be Breece Hall. They gave him $45 million. They could have traded him for a third or fourth round pick at the deadline last year, decided not to do that. And I still think there is a really good player in Breece Hall. We just have not seen it consistently enough, but this is the time, like at entering the prime, you know what, this is year 5 for him. This is where he can go back and be like, oh yeah, remember when everyone was talking about him as like one of the premier dynasty assets? I think we're getting there
again. I am ranking Breece Hall ahead of Javonte Williams every single time, despite him on Yahoo going after Javonte Williams. He's an interesting part of drafts. Again, he's the meat of the sandwich between Javonte and then Scataboo and Travis Etienne. And from a talent perspective, I think he's above all of those
guys.
I
agree.
This is a shocking name for me, for you to bring up, because I haven't really heard you talk about Breece Hall that often. Is that just from a zoom out, a pure upside swing, or just like overall really into Breece Hall no matter what?
I think it's like the right tier for him. Like, I'm drafting Malik Nabers, but the rest of them, if you don't have a running back by this point, like, you kind of have to, or if you, I like him as my running back too, if you went wide receiver running back at the start. I just think we're talking about a good player. The environment is getting better at the margins. It's obviously still, we're dealing with Frank Reich and whatnot, but the reason why I actually brought him up was I was comparing him to Ashton Jeanty, and it's like Ashton Jeanty's environment is getting way better. Like, is there that much of a talent difference between Jeanty and Breece Hall? I don't think the answer is there's a big difference between the two. They both can catch passes. They could both be a bruiser. They're both bell cow backs. There's environmental concerns around them, whether it's the offensive line with Ashton Jeanty or the play calling for the Jets. It's all about a wash to me. They're projected for the same amount of points as a team. Like, one goes 11th overall, one goes 36th overall. I feel like I would just do the 36th overall stuff with Breece.
It's funny you brought up Ashton Jeanty. I'm, I guess, fading him in comparison, because previously he was going ahead of a lot of other running backs I wanted drafted in front of him, like Saquon Barkley and Chase Brown. I could go on and on and on that list. Go watch our previous video on that if you want to hear that spiel. But the exact same time, Hayden, I could mention Ashton Jeanty in this episode. Like, I could mention Ashton Jeanty as a possible league winner. Ryan Heath pulled the stat, and I thought it was incredible that the Raiders got inside of the opposing 10-yard line on only 23 drives all of last season. That's the fourth fewest of any team since 2021. So that's bad in and of itself. Then the Raiders also ran the ball only 38% of the time when they got inside the 10-yard line. Compare that to Clint Kubiak offenses that have gotten inside the 10-yard line an average of 35 times per season, and then they run the ball 58% of the time in those situations. So, again, if Kubiak just elevates the offense from awful to average, and then you also get the bump in just pure opportunities because he runs the ball more in that area versus throwing it, then that gives you a 10, 12 touchdown output compared to what he ran from last year.
I'm just worried they're going from horrific to awful this year. I agree. Not horrific to average.
I just wanted to be open that while because the price is so rich right now at Ashton Jeanty, it feels like I'm fading him. At the same time, I'm aware enough that he could be the dude this year if it all goes right for him.
Yep, of course.
And I don't think those are like contradictory statements in a way, because this is kind of a different way of viewing these players versus every single draft, I'm taking this player at the top of this group.
Yeah, and we keep citing Ryan Heath. Another big thing is like a lot of the running back hits are kind of in this range, like this second, first, second, third range. And I do think that Brees Hall is kind of like him, Skyway team, to me, seem like last call. Like, I don't think that David Montgomery, Bucky Irvin, I think like those guys are just a little bit capped. There's maybe one or two that we can get to, but I do think the difference between like Scadaboo and Brees Hall in terms of just like upside, in terms of just bell cow profiles, I do think these are kind of like the last names I would put in that conversation.
Well, I'll throw in the last name for me, and that's Bashal Tuten. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's still on Yahoo going ahead of the sixth round. He's at the end of the fifth round right now as running back 25, a little bit earlier in your best ball drafts at running back 22. I mean, simply put, we want the lead guy in a Liam Cohen offense when it can really be focused in on the lead guy. Bucky Irving was the running back 11 when he started those games back in 2024. Last year, Travis Etienne was running back 10 in points per game. And again, we're drafting Tuten as a running back 25 at this moment. And I do want to note my comment earlier of how you want to draft running backs that either catch passes or score touchdowns and is great in between. Neither of those guys really caught passes, and they still finished top 11, top 12, top 10 at their positions. Travis Etienne was 22nd in targets per game. Bucky Irving was even lower than that. And I even think that Bashal Tuten can be kind of dynamic in the screen game. And when that works, like Liam Cohen can really dial him up in that area of the field. So this is a lot. We had this conversation where, you know, Liam Cohen, history with Chris Rodriguez, efficient runner. We're going to bat singles, 4, 5, 6 yard runs. And so while granted, yes, Chris Rodriguez ranked top 5, 6 in a lot of those metrics, Bashal Tuten was right there in a lot of those underlying metrics in terms of top 12 and first down or touchdown rate and 8th in success rate on top of it. So I am expecting a big leap here. And I think that Bashal Tuten is going to have the first crack at it. And if he starts from week 1, 2, 3, running for his life and running well, then he could carry that for all 17 games this season.
Yeah, the bar is really low to clear to be effective in the Liam Cohen offense. Like, it's as simple as that at this position. Bashal Tuten's interesting because he should absolutely be involved in this podcast, and he should absolutely be involved in like potential worst picks on the board. If this thing can go either way, with Bashal Tuten, the training camp reports early on have been optimistic. Chris Rodriguez is back in practice, but Bashal Tuten has made the most of the offseason without him, and Liam Cohen keeps shouting him out. And there's very evident on tape that he was so close to some big explosive, just got tripped up for whatever reason. He has to just simply play better, be more trusted to get on the field more. But he does have the juice, and with Liam Cohen, that's how you can really pay off. Just ask Travis Etienne last year, who had a really nice season. Even if we don't think that he's one of like the most electric backs in the NFL.
Yeah. If Chris Rodriguez is what's standing in my way between drafting a guy at running back 25 that can finish as the running back 10 in points per game, then I'm going to take that bet every single time. I appreciate some things that Chris Rodriguez does, but I'm going to take that bet every single time. And I'm happy to do that. Okay. I think you have one more name. Who is it?
Kyle Pitts is my next name here. We're talking about the prime of our careers at tight end. It's the age 25 season. I was just looking at like, what is like the top, I think it was like the top 25 tight end since 2000. How old were they in these like peak seasons? And the most common answer was 25 years old, which is what happens with Kyle Pitts. Next most was like 26 years old. So we're talking about the sweet spot where he's mentally mature for the game and physically in his prime. And I think that last part is really key with Kyle Pitts, because we went for about 3 seasons in a row where it's very evident that he was not healthy. But over the last his rookie season and his last year, his two healthy seasons, we're talking about a 17-game pace of almost 1,000 yards. And I like to look at the thresholds of, are you the first or second pass catcher on your team? I think that's a definitive yes with Kyle Pitts. I like to look at the coaching tree. You get Kevin Stefanski, who's just been coming from the tree that you always talk about with Colt McCoy, just the primary read so often. We saw it with Harold Fannin. We saw it with David Njoku, specifically with Kevin Stefanski. So this is just a bet on Kyle Pitts being as good of a prospect as he was. If he hits that, we're talking about way, way, way too cheap. If he's just really good as a receiver, then I think that he's still too cheap. He's like kind of the last call of a real potential to finish like a top three, top four fantasy tight end. I think that next tier, once you get to the Kelce's, Kittle's, likely that tier, not for me in terms of upside. Kyle Pitts goes the latest of all like the consensus top eight tight ends on Yahoo. That's my one of my favorite picks that you can make. It's kind of like when the running back prices kind of fall by the wayside, and now enter Kyle Pitts.
Yeah. Kyle Pitts is a perfect way to end this episode. There are a devil and an angel on either shoulder, and I can listen to either example here. The positives tend to outweigh the negatives with Kyle Pitts here. It's a lot of what you outlined. It's also being top two in a very funneled offense. That was Kevin Stefanski. We always want pieces of that when the tight end is involved because it's streamlined and it's easier to have a top five scoring week at tight end than it is at wide receiver top five, right? However, I look back and, you know, when Kyle Pitts is most fun, when he jumps off the screen, it's a lot of these intermediate and downfield targets. I just want gimmies for Kyle Pitts, man. And we got it like one season a couple years ago where more than ever, he got like, you know, 3 yard routes, 8 yard routes, all this type of stuff versus just 12, 15, 16. And the stuff he was doing with Kirk Cousins last year, just mossing dudes and winning down the field. I really hope Kevin Stefanski outlines some of the stuff they did with Harold Fannin last year and says, okay, I can do that stuff with Kyle Pitts. And if that's the case, then it gives us both a floor and a ceiling on a weekly basis with Pitts. That has been the problem in previous years. And also, hopefully, some touchdown scoring opportunities, which has been the other problem with Kyle Pitts in previous years.
I will say, from 2022 to 2024, his ADOT was 11 yards down the field. And then this last year, it dropped down to just over 7 yards down the field. So like that's the difference of being like kind of like an X vertical receiver versus like a normal tight end with just a little bit more explosiveness and a run away from you potential. So like to me, like that's kind of like the sweet spot zone that you're talking about where you want the explosiveness around him, but he's not like not involved in the underneath stuff. He at least got a couple screens, 9% of his targets last year were screens, which is actually a above average number, even among like the consensus, like top 15 fantasy tight ends. So more involvement there, I think, has closed the gap. I just looked at the tape and it was just like, he's running by guys again. Like that to me is what the most important thing is in terms of ceiling. I'm not sure if the Falcons defense is going to be very good this year on top of it. And they're in dome games, and I can see Tua just like peppering them underneath, getting the ball out quickly, and all of a sudden there are more gimmies in the offense.
So we opened the summer saying, hey, if you go with an early round tight end, that's great. If you don't take an early round tight end, just wait. Don't spend a middle round pick on a tight end. Yet, you and I in episodes recently, I've talked up Sam Laporta. You've talked up Kyle Pitts. We know Tucker Kraft is a machine if he's healthy and out there for week one. The same can be said for George Kittle, who's going even later on a platform like Yahoo. Are we now regretting what we said earlier in the summer? Like, are you more open after doing more and more research of this Kyle Pitts for you, Sam Laporta tier for me?
I would say so. These guys are really good at football and they're all really young, like kind of like this tight end, tight end one to tight end eight are all young players. I guess the one thing that's in the back of my mind is on Yahoo, they do get priced up a little bit versus the best ball streets. But I just don't want to be going into my leagues with freaking Mark Andrews and George Kittle and just like hoping that things are getting better. And I really struggle to find like true sleeper tight ends. Like maybe Chigakonkwo can get there, like a Juwan Johnson, like those types. But we're talking about like those guys hit if they're the tight end 11 this year. And I just don't see like that many like true upside swings like we had last year, where it was like Colson Loveland and Tyler Warren. Those guys were the tight end 10, 11, 12 in drafts. Right. That just doesn't exist this year. So I think we're kind of forced like picking one of these guys, even if I don't love the price tags necessarily on any of them.
That's going to do it. Thank you all for tuning in. Again, we have 4 episodes this week, including one with Nate Tice tomorrow. If you're new around here and you've made it an hour into the show, definitely hit that subscribe button and leave a thumbs up too. So YouTube knows that you watched this video. You've been leaving, you know, over 1500 likes on every single video we've done so far over the last week. So appreciate you keeping that streak alive. And man, preseason games are right around the corner, and this is the place that you want to be for instant rankings, updates, and just analysis to all the rookies and all the overperformers and how everything is shifting ahead of your fantasy drafts. So thank you all for watching. We'll see you in the next video.